Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Krupko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Syria. Is the race for Raqqa over? The American-allied Syrian Democratic Forces launched the final stage of their liberation operation in Raqqa, but questions are swirling about what comes next after Daesh is defeated. Gulf crisis, Cold War, and the GCC. The Gulf Cooperation Council was rocked by scandal this week as Saudi Arabia and its allies swiftly moved to cut all ties with fellow member Qatar over claims that it supports regional terrorism. And also, Brazil. Will another president fall? Brazil resumes its trial into allegations that President Temer illegally funded his 2014 campaign, leaving open the chance that he might be the country's second leader to be impeached in as many years. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the Kurds' assault on Raqqa. The American-allied Syrian Democratic Forces launched the final stage of their liberation operation in Raqqa, but questions are swirling about what comes next after Daesh is defeated. The SDF is mostly comprised of the Kurdish YPG militia, which unanimously declared the federalization of what they termed to be Rojava back in March 2016, and their leaders already announced that they'll seek to annex the majority Arab city to their statelet if they're successful in freeing it. The Syrian Arab Army, on the other hand, is fighting to preserve the existing unitary nature of the state pending a nationwide post-war referendum over the country's new constitution and administrative future. The Kurds in Damascus technically aren't at war with one another and even cooperated on several occasions, but it's impossible to deny their contradictory visions for what Syria should look like once the anti-terrorist campaign is finished. Moreover, they each have different great powers behind them. The Syrian Arab Army is backed up by Russia, while the SDF has the support of the U.S. The liberation of Raqqa is so important for Syria's future because whichever force frees the city will be in a stronger position to determine post-war political events in northeastern Syria, or, in other words, either making the Kurds' federation a fait accompli or not. Which is why the SDF and the Syrian Arab Army had been racing towards Daesh's capital. The SDF beat Damascus to the chase, however, because government forces were caught up responding to a sudden wave of terrorist attacks in the already liberated territories. And the Kurds importantly received American support in crossing the Euphrates near Tabqa and cutting off the Syrian Arab Army along the southern reaches to the city. Judging by the months-long campaign in Mosul, it'll probably still take some time before the terrorists are removed from Raqqa, but it's a given that Damascus and the Kurds are already planning their next moves. The three most pressing uncertainties that remain between them are over who will end up liberating the downstream city of Deir ez-Zor, the fate of the so-called Democratic Federation Northern Syria and the country's administrative future more generally, and what will become of the U.S. bases in northeastern Syria after the war. So, folks, this is a very deep topic and is definitely in the news nowadays, so we're joined by Mr. Tim Anderson to discuss this further with us. He's an Australian analyst, senior lecturer at the University of Sydney, and author of The Dirty War on Syria.
Trendstorm.
All right, Tim, how do the Kurds expect to maintain and expand their so-called federation in the many areas where they aren't a majority, and what's their motivation in wanting to do so anyhow?
It's a difficult question and a good question because Kurds in Syria are actually spread throughout the country, and as you pointed out, they're not really a majority in any particular area, not even in the north area. But although there has been a really disturbing process going on around Qamishli in Hathaka, and I know because a lot of the families from there have been arriving in my city on the other side of the world in Sydney. 500 families from around Qamishli, for example, are Syrian families. Syrian Christian families arrived fairly recently. So it's, and apparently some of the villages there have been virtually emptied. You know, you imagine that bigger movement of people in relatively small villages. So there may be a fair degree of fluidity going on in those villages, but getting back to your main point, the issue of, I think you're talking about an area that includes parts where there are hardly any Kurds, like Raqqa, for example, and there's a lot of questions about that and how viable that strategy, driven by the US, of course, is going to be.
Okay, well, what options realistically exist for Damascus to peacefully reintegrate the Kurds into a unitary Syrian state, and what would be the consequences if they don't succeed with this?
Well, I think the Syrians pacing themselves with a strategy. You know, you'd recall back in 2012, I think it was, that Bashar al-Assad gave, I think, 300,000 Kurds in Syria Syrian citizenship. Apparently, there are still complaints about some lacking citizenship, but that's in large part, I believe, because there's been quite a lot of movement across the borders in the last few years with the conflict in Iraq to some extent. There was movement from Iraq into Syria, but also bigger population in Turkey under the gun. There's been movement from Turkey into Syria too. Once the flow was reversed, that is to say, once ISIS was pushed away from some of those border areas, and the Syrian army gave arms to Kurdish groups back at that time. I don't believe the SDF was actually created by then, but, and the SDF, of course, is the Syrian Democratic Forces, the one that the US has mainly been pinning its hopes on of maintaining influence in northeast Syria, is Kurdish-led, but not entirely Kurdish. And there's some of the, that's at the root of some of the complaints in that region that really non-Kurdish people up there have not, particularly in recent times, have not really been given the option of not supporting the Kurdish movement or the Rojava movement, the separatist movement, because, unless they support that, they'll be rejected and they won't be protected there. Anyway, I think the problem is that there has been a lot of fluidity there, and that's obviously a card that the US is playing now in its attempt to weaken Damascus. I mean, they used ISIS to occupy parts of Syria to weaken Damascus, and now it seems that this is a new step of their strategy. Once ISIS is removed or weakened, they're trying to use the Kurdish card to weaken Syria. I think, going back to your point about Damascus, I think that Raqqa, for example, has not been their main priority, still is not their main priority now. Deir ez-Zor is the main priority now, but they've been very thorough in passing across countryside Aleppo and through countryside Homs and trying to secure that southern border with the conflict that's going on there so that they don't have any backward movements. You know, they lost Palmyra once as a result of not securing all the ground there. So I don't think there's an anxious race to Raqqa to try and deliberately race US-backed forces there. I think that the Syrian position is that they can sort this out later on, because there's going to be a lot of contradictions in US-backed forces trying to hang on to any part of Syria.
Okay, well, I mean, when we look at some of the possibilities for sorting this out later on, how pivotal of a role do you think the new constitution will play in reaching a potential compromise solution between both sides? And also, what's your take on Russia's proposal to decentralize the country?
Well, again, I think that just looking at the Syrian point of view on this, I don't think they're in a rush to deal with that. And they, for example, have, from time to time, the president has suggested that there's certain things that he wants addressed in the constitution, including the requirement for president to be a Muslim, for example, to further secularize the system there. Certainly there's strong support from the other major secular party, the SSNP, in terms of the constitution. I wouldn't give that much importance to some suggested drafts of the constitution that have been there talking about federalization and so on. And it doesn't seem to disturb the Syrian government that much, because their main thing is that they'll maintain control of the process. It can't be imposed on them by anyone else. And even if drafts have been circulated which suggest certain things about federal, in particular the most controversial things about a federal structure or even a parliamentary system without a president and so on, I don't think they're that worried about the matter, so long as they're maintaining the integrity of the state and the army, and they keep control of the process. Russia, after all, has repeatedly stated the politically correct position that the Syrian people have to vote on this. And even if there were a proposal, for example, for a federal structure, it's pretty clear the Syrian people would not support that. They would have to destroy Syria as a nation in a way like has happened in Iraq, to try and get that sort of dramatic shift in the constitution through, and that's just not happening at the moment.
Okay, Tim, well, thank you very much for this really great review of events, and it was also a pretty interesting glimpse of what might come. So thanks a lot for appearing on Trendstorm.
Thanks very much, Andrew. Thanks, you too. Bye.
Trendstorm.
Now we're going to swing over and speak to our Syrian guest. That's Mr. Iyad Huder. He's a Syrian political commentator. All right, Iyad, now that Raqqa is pretty much surrounded by the Kurds, all eyes are moving to Deir ez-Zor to see if the Syrian Arab Army can beat the SDF in liberating it. So how do you foresee that part of the anti-Daesh campaign progressing, and who do you think will ultimately end up freeing the city?
The question is, why now?
they are trying to liberate Raqqa. Of course, it's linked to their resort as well. Why didn't the U.S. try to liberate Raqqa before? I think it's because the Syrian army and its allies are now advancing in that area to eastern Syria. And this doesn't seem to be good for the U.S., that the Syrian government to regain those territories. While in the past, the U.S. didn't seem to be in rush to liberate Raqqa. Why? It seems to me that the U.S. strategy in Syria is actually to keep the war going on as much as possible, because they want to weaken the Syrian state as a whole, the Syrian army, the Syrian infrastructure, on the long term, and also to market their weapons through selling them to Saudi Arabia, which is in turn sending those weapons to the terrorists in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere. Now, what I foresee, what will happen next, I think that these obstacles will not stop the Syrian army from advancing towards Deir ez-Zor with the help of Russia. Of course, and Russia is bearing the heaviest responsibility in fighting the Islamic State together with the Syrian army and the allies. Meanwhile, the U.S. is just showing off with some bombardment. And by the way, I have contacts right from Deir ez-Zor and from Raqqa, by the way. I have a friend who is a journalist and he has just come back from Raqqa. He's telling me that of civilians in Raqqa towards the campaign, the U.S.-led campaign to liberate Raqqa is very bad. They say that the U.S.-led coalition is simply bombarding the infrastructure and the facilities, buildings, rather than chasing ISIS Islamists. And they are very disappointed with the U.S. approach in Raqqa.
That's terrible. Well, thank you for sharing that with our listeners. You know, I want to ask you real briefly, Iyad, since we still got about a couple minutes left, about what Lavrov said during his meeting with Trump last month. He said that both sides discussed expanding the de-escalation zones nationwide. So in view of this, what role do you envision the U.S. possibly playing? I mean, especially considering its existing military presence in northeastern Syria.
Well, backing the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, which is, as I said before, it's a Kurdistan wannabe, I think they are envisaging a role for them in post-war Syria, as they might be the U.S. agent in Syria, and probably they will be also backing their attempt to establish de facto Kurdistan Federation in northern Syria, which they call Rojava, which I think it means in Kurdish like western region, that they refer to the western part of Kurdistan in Iraq. And by the way, I read about American statement calling Israel to back the Syrian Democratic Forces, and the statement says that they are the only potential friend for Israel in future Syria. And by the way, here, if I can tell you the or transfer the general impression for Syrians towards going on, they look at the Syrian Democratic Forces and the Kurdish ambitions as a new colony or new Israel in the region, because they are supported by the U.S. and they are trying to cut a part of Syria as they are doing in Iraq. So I'm afraid this might be the case. But of course, this will be challenged strongly by all the regions. No one state in the region will accept such separative state in the region. Syria is against, even Turkey is against this, of course, as we know, as well as Iraq and Iran.
All right, Iyad. Well, the last thing I want to ask you then is, if we look beyond Raqqa to the other corner of northern Syria, what do you think will happen with al-Nusra in Idlib province following Daesh's defeat in the east? And do you anticipate Turkey playing any role in that particular anti-terrorist campaign since it was shut out of Raqqa?
Well, you know, I hope Turkey will not play a role in the anti-terror campaign, because, you know, I met several journalists from Turkey who are near to government, even if they are not affiliated to the government. And their narrative is really very, very shocking and disappointing to me, because for them, terrorists are mainly the Kurdish forces and in addition to Islamic State, but Kurdish forces in the first place. And they completely ignore al-Nusra and the other Islamist extremist groups, as if those militants are like, they are peace activists. This is really strange. So I believe that the al-Nusra Front in Idlib and together with the other Islamist groups are for Turkey like friends for Turkey. And Turkey considered their presence in Idlib as an extension to its influence in Syria. But I believe that Idlib might be the last battle in Syria. If Russia and its allies succeed in defeating ISIS, I think the last battle will be in Idlib, and this will intensify the conflict and confrontation with Turkey, because they could never prevail in Idlib without the direct support of Turkey.
All right, Iyad, well, thank you so much for this very informative interview. I mean, we are really honored that you would share the on-the-ground reporting from your sources with us, and we really think that you had a lot of interesting things to say, and you touched on some pretty valid points. So thank you for speaking to us today and coming on Trendstorm. Thank you.
Thanks to you, Andrew.
Trendstorm.
All right, folks, if we take the time to reflect on what Tim and Iyad share with us today, we should definitely arrive at the conclusion that the war for Syria is not over, although the battle for Raqqa has just begun. But at the same time, we see that the Syrian Arab Army has pretty much been shut out of Raqqa, but that does not mean that they don't have a chance to liberate Deir ez-Zor, which is almost as strategic as Raqqa. But we also can't look past the fact that there are going to be some serious post-war contradictions emerging in Syria between Damascus and the Kurds, given the fact that the SDF, which is a majority Kurdish, has unilaterally declared a federation, which totally contradicts everything that Damascus says. So we're going to have to see how this gets resolved. We should cross our fingers that it will be peacefully, and let's just hope that Moscow and Washington can reach some type of accommodation to make it so. So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.